Well, most of you have often heard me speak in the tones of some of my forebears. But there's a special reason this morning for saying to you, a great good morning to you, in the words of the Irish. It's St. Patrick's Day. And those of you who aren't wearing green this morning, I just remind you that everyone's Irish on St. Patrick's Day. So if you can just pick a clover on your way out and stick it behind your ear, that'll be a good thing. So it being a day special to the Irish, I have an Irish joke for you. A man wanders into a pub and sits down and notices that at the end of the bar there's two old gentlemen in animated conversation. And the one says to the other, "And you were born when, then?" 1948. "No, I too was born in 1948. And where did you start your schooling?" "Holy Redeemer." "No." "Ah, bless me, I went also to Holy Redeemer." "And you went on to college where?" "Well, Christ Church, of course." "No, how could it be that we didn't know one another? I too went to Christ Church." And the man who'd sat down at the bar says, "What's with these two old gents?" And the bartender says, "Oh, take no notice. The McGarrigle twins are drunk again." We're all drunk. That's what Christ said of us. We're all drunk. That's in the Gospel of Thomas, he says this. He says, when we sober up, we'll be all right. So we're here to talk this morning about sobering up a little bit. And now I'll drop the accent because it gets a little trying after a while, both for you and for me. But it's fun for a bit. Then my great-granddad really did talk like that.
Krishna was God drunk.
Ramakrishna. Was?
God drunk and lover.
Ah.
Remember? Yes. Those lines.
Yes. So we'll start with just a couple of announcements. One, a sad one. For those of you who know her, Cindy Craven's father died Thursday night out in California at the Veterans Home in Yountville. Very peacefully and in full consciousness, we're told, which is blessed. But Cindy is, of course, very sad, and at some point in the undetermined future, probably in May, maybe sooner, we'll have a memorial service here in the chapel for those people who know Cindy well and love her. And also, though, there are many people here in Atlanta who still do remember her father, including his late wife and late ex-wife, Nancy, who's Cindy's mother, of course. So that's... But it was, as I say, an expected and peaceful passing, though Cindy is upset, as you might imagine. The second announcement is, please mark your calendar for a weekend retreat at the end of April, the 26th, 27th, and 28th. Swami Nirakaranandaji of the St. Louis Center will be here from that Friday to the Sunday, and offer us a workshop on Jnana Yoga. I'm sorry, Raja Yoga. He'll offer us his wisdom about Raja Yoga. Is there anything else I might have announced that I didn't recall? Okay. Lori's often good at remembering some things that I'd forgotten. Apparently, that's it for right. Oh, just one little note. Again, next week we'll have a talk that has a pun in its title. The title of next week's talk is "Metaphors Be With You." And again, it's a talk on Karma Yoga. March is a month for the study of Karma Yoga, a spiritual path leading to the abandonment of selfishness. As a karma yogi, you practice offering your actions and their results, as well as your perceptions, thoughts, and feelings, to the divine presence. Even before fully knowing this presence, you hold firmly to the belief that the presence is within each person or other living being that you interact with or serve. Working and abiding in this spirit, you are increasingly able to release attachment to your activities and their results. This yields the freedom and contentment promised by Karma Yoga. As Sri Krishna says to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, even a little practice of this yoga will save you from the terrible wheel of birth and death, of rebirth and death. So we're going to be talking about Karma Yoga in this context this morning. And we'll start with this. There is no limit to the power of the human mind, wrote Swami Vivekananda in his introduction to Raja Yoga, the Swami's translation of and commentary on Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. That infinite power is our birthright, Vivekananda says. Yet most of us have very little control of it. That infinite power is our birthright, yet most of us have very little control of it. Why is that? According to the teachings of Vedanta, it is because we yield our attention to the overlay of time, space, and causation, called Maya, that spontaneously arises when the divine power, Om, becomes manifest. There are the periods, we're told, in the ancient scriptures, both the Judeo-Christian and Hindu or Sanatana Dharma scriptures, when there is no manifestation. There is silence. There is stillness on the waters of the deep. Stillness, no vibration. Then, by the will of God, by the will of the divine presence, manifestation arises and creation, as we understand it and know it, occurs. So that's what's meant by divine power becomes manifest. Yet this aspect of the divine called Maya dissipates our power. It fragments the eternal, the changeless, Om, into an ever-renewing succession of good and bad experiences. Life becomes like a hall of mirrors, discontinuous, fundamentally illogical, often frightening. Is it any wonder that we grasp at anything that seems to offer some security or ease our pain? As Bob Dylan sang in his song, All Along the Watchtower, there must be some way out of here. There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief. About the same time that Bob Dylan was becoming well known, there was another figure that was studying and would later become quite well known. And he encountered his teacher, Don Juan Matus, a Yaqui Indian spiritual master, who offered his student Carlos Castaneda a years-long series of lessons on a way out of here. He called the technique stopping the world. Castaneda chronicled Don Juan's instructions in his book, Journey to Ixtlan. The book is out of print, but you can still get copies if you're interested after this morning's talk. You can still get copies online through Amazon and others. This morning we will explore and discuss several chapters of the book and compare what Don Juan taught with the teachings, compare what Don Juan taught with the teachings of Sri Ramakrishna, Swami Vivekananda, and the sage Patanjali. But first, let's talk a little about Om and why it appears in the title of today's talk, which is Mind Your Own Business. Mind Your Own Business. The shortest of the Upanishads, the Mandukya, starts this way. The syllable Om, which is the imperishable Brahman, is the universe. The syllable Om, which is the imperishable Brahman, is the universe. Whatsoever has existed, whatsoever exists, whatsoever shall exist hereafter is Om. And whatsoever transcends past, present, and future, that also is Om. All this that we see without is Brahman. The self that is within is Brahman. This self is one with Om. As most of you know who are familiar with this tradition, virtually every mantra and prayer begins with Om. Om Asato Ma Satkamaya. Oh, I forgot this morning's prayer. Well, we'll let it go for this one time. No, we won't. Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavabahai, Tejasvina Vaditamastu, Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om, may the Divine Being look over us lovingly as a mother and father. May the Divine Being support and nourish us as a mother and father. May we have the strength and skill to study together the art of spirituality. May no misunderstandings arise amongst us. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto us and to all beings everywhere. I got so entranced with the Irishness of today that I forgot myself. So that is our opening prayer. And of course, it begins and ends with Om. So according to the Mandukya Upanishad, Om, clearly and unavoidably, is our business, because we are dealing with it in whatever form or name it takes at all times. Whatsoever exists, whatsoever has existed, whatsoever shall exist, and whatsoever transcends existence and non-existence, all that is Om. How mindful we are of that, how aware we are of it from moment to moment, and why we may not be, and why we may not be aware of it, that is another matter. It's interesting that Mandukya means frog. A frog has four stages of existence: egg, tadpole, adult, and dead. When Sri Ramakrishna met Keshab Sen, the head of the Brahmo Samaj, and if you remember both Swami Vivekananda and Swami Brahmananda, the last two pictures in that vertical row there, when they were teenage boys, they were members of the Brahmo Samaj. It was a reform movement attempting to rationalize Hindu spiritual practices, Indian spiritual practices, with what the British had brought. Keshab Sen was a famous person, known to the royalty of England. He'd been there and so on and so forth. Quite a fellow. And when Sri Ramakrishna met him, the master used the frog metaphor to describe Keshab's state of development. Ramakrishna said he has dropped his tail. meaning that Keshab was spiritually mature. A tadpole drops its tail when it becomes an adult. An adult frog is an amphibian, capable of living both in the water where it was born and in the higher world outside its pond. It may sometimes be in the world of its birth, but it is no longer of it. So this frog metaphor and the four stages, if those of you who know the Mandukya, it goes on to describe the waking, dreaming, and dreamless state, and then it describes the fourth state, the Turiya, which is beyond existence and non-existence. So the four stages of a frog's life and the four stages, there's a metaphorical parallel being drawn. So how can we become like Keshab Sen, spiritually mature? Let's hear a little more from Swami Vivekananda. This is from Raja Yoga, Swamiji's translation and commentary on Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. Our good and bad deeds are not the direct cause in the transformations of nature, but they act as breakers of obstacles to the evolutions of nature. As a farmer breaks the obstacles to the course of water, which then runs down by its own nature. The water for irrigation of fields is already in the canal, only shut in by gates. The farmer opens these gates, and the water flows in by itself by the law of gravitation. Do you see the metaphor that Swami is developing? The infinite power behind that he spoke of in the reading earlier. It's there. It's only blocked. So we need to become the farmers that open the gates. And then by itself, the infinite power will flow by the law of gravitation. Back to Swamiji. So all progress and power are already in every human. Perception is in mankind's nature, in humankind's nature. Only it is barred in and prevented from taking its proper course. If anyone can take the bar off, in rushes nature. Then the man attains the powers which are his already. Those we call wicked become saints. And of course, if we stop and think about the life of Sri Ramakrishna, and the people who became his disciples, among them was the notorious Girish Ghosh. I say notorious because he was in his own time. He was a great roué, a great party animal, to use today's terminology. Calcutta at that time was the Paris of the East, you know. Calcutta was the capital of India and quite a racy place. And Girish Ghosh was a playwright, an actor, and owner of theaters and so on, and a dead drunkard. A dead drunkard who would wake up the next morning and dictate five plays at once to five different secretaries, having a little wine to ease the black dog. When he became Sri Ramakrishna's disciple, Sri Ramakrishna's spiritual power unbarred the gates to the further power that was in Girish Ghosh. And if you read Swami Chaitananda's book about this transformation, it is amazing. The man truly became a saint. So this is what is meant, I'm sure was in Swamiji's thoughts when he wrote this passage, when he wrote these words. Those we call wicked become saints as soon as the bar is broken and nature rushes in. Now, nature is another word that Swamiji uses for the divine feminine. This power of manifestation, he said, based on his actual experience, he said, I believe there is a power in the universe that thinks of herself as feminine. And then he said, and her name is Kali. So this is what he means by nature. It is nature that is driving us toward perfection, and eventually she will bring everyone there. All these practices and struggles to become religious are only negative work to take off the bars and open the doors to that perfection, which is our birthright, our nature. The great ancient evolutionist Patanjali declares that the true secret of evolution is the manifestation of the perfection which is already in every being, that this perfection has been barred and the infinite tide behind, the infinite tide of power and knowledge and bliss. That he just uses the word tide, but he means Satchidananda. Power, knowledge, bliss. The infinite tide behind is struggling to express itself. These struggles are but the results of our ignorance. These struggles, the struggles that we experience in our life, are only the results of our ignorance because we do not know the proper way to unlock the gate and let the water in. This infinite tide behind must express itself. It is the cause of all manifestation. This perfect nature behind will make us go forward until everyone has become perfect. In the animal, the man was suppressed, but as soon as the door was opened, out rushed humankind. So in humankind there is the potential God kept in by the locks and bars of ignorance. When knowledge breaks these bars, the God becomes manifest. That's the end of the quote from Swamiji. Swamiji confidently asserts that in each of us there is a God, enchained there by the locks and bars of ignorance. What can we do to break those locks and bars of ignorance? I mentioned I would bring in this person, Don Juan Matus. Let me introduce Don Juan Matus, an indigenous spiritual master, a Yaqui Indian by birth, northwest Mexico. He tells us we can learn to stop the world, stop this endless chain of good and bad experiences. He is describing samadhi. Don Juan's student, Carlos Castaneda, wrote about his benefactor's teachings in several books. The material we'll discuss today is from Castaneda's book, Journey to Ixtlan. I'm going to extemporize a little bit about Don Juan. Don Juan lived some distance outside a village, down a dirt road in a little cabin that he built himself, probably with the help of his students, because he had more students than just Carlos Castaneda. Castaneda encountered him in 1960. Castaneda was a doctoral student working on his PhD in anthropology at UCLA, and he had decided to write his dissertation on medicinal plants, the use of medicinal plants. So he was looking for an informant, someone who could tell him and in a bus station in southern Arizona, a friend of Castaneda's said, "Oh, you should talk to this man who happened to be in the building at the time in this bus station. He knows a good bit about these plants." And by this, we're talking about peyote, psilocybin mushrooms, Jimson weed, and so on. Those things that are used sacramentally by the Native American peoples, not for recreational drugs, but sacramentally. So Castaneda struck up a relationship with Don Juan. But it took an unexpected turn. Instead of Don Juan becoming his informant about plants, though he did later on teach him about these plants, he became his benefactor. He became, in our language, his guru. And in the story, in the book Journey to Ixtlan, there is the story of the moments, the night, when Castaneda realized that that was the true nature of their relationship. And I can only suggest that you, rather than me read it to you or relate it to you, try to relate it to you, if you are interested, go read it for yourself. It's very moving. It's very moving. The encounter with his guru, when he finally realized. So what Don Juan began was this course of instruction in which he slowly and slowly, over a period of about 12 years, took Castaneda, this is from 1960 to about 1972, took Castaneda from this rather quite intelligent but kind of shallow person who was riding along on the surface of things, getting along on his wits and so on, and turned him into what, in Don Juan's terms, is a warrior. Warrior. Not in the sense of armed conflict, but a warrior against the against Maya, against the relentless assault of our senses and our perceptions and our feelings on the truth of our being. As you will see, the things that Don Juan taught Castaneda are not at all unfamiliar to us. For example, Don Juan's lessons on stopping the world begin with a chapter on erasing personal history. Erasing personal history. Why would you want to erase your personal history? Because the more you think of yourself in terms of your past, the less you are thinking about what is actually happening in this moment. Furthermore, as you spread the tales of your personal history among the people that you know, Don Juan asserts you are building a trap for yourself. Because those people's thoughts and expectations of you are your world. You have created your world. As Goethe said, a human being sees in the world what they carry in their heart. So if you build this world of expectations by telling people who you are, oh, this is how I've been, and this is who I've been, and this is what I've done, and da-da-da-da-da, all of your personal history. We all know people who do this relentlessly. Not only are they removing themselves as they do that from the present moment, but they are creating a system of expectations. So that's you, who you expect them to be when you encounter them. It limits their freedom. They're immediately limiting their own freedom. So Don Juan says, erase your personal history. And Castaneda said, how did you do that? He said, I just dropped it, like I dropped my smoking and my drinking. I just dropped it. I decided it wasn't useful to me. And so I stopped talking about it. And now no one knows who I am, not even me. Because we don't know who we are. We do not know. When Swami Vivekananda says there's infinite power, infinite potential behind, there's no limit to the power of the human mind. We don't know what we are, what we can become. We know only what we have been. And when we erase that from our conversation and our awareness, we're beginning to be freer, so that we can confront what's in us in front of us. Second chapter of Stopping the World, the section called Stopping the World, is losing self-importance. Losing self-importance. Now, if you read chapter 3 of Bhagavad Gita, it's all about losing self-importance. You're no longer at the center of things. Krishna says, you think you're the doer. You're not the doer. I'm the doer, he said. Om. Om is speaking. He says, I am Om. You're not the doer. So offer everything to me. You suddenly are no longer at the center of everything. You're just in the presence of things that are happening, you are participating in, and you are offering. So your attachment to your results, the attachment to your actions and your results, fades away. But sometimes teachers are a little more direct about this when they take someone on, as Don Juan was with Castaneda. If you remember when Mahendranath Gupta, the man who transcribed his conversations and experiences with Sri Ramakrishna and later published them as the Kathamrita, the great nectar, or we call it the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. When Sri Ramakrishna first encountered him, when M came to him, Mahendranath Gupta called himself M. When he came to him, Sri Ramakrishna systematically dismantled his smug sense of self-importance. After all, the man was a principal of a high school, which was a big deal in Calcutta, that not just any high school, but Vidyasagar's high school, private high school. Very, very important position. And M came to him kind of full of himself. And if you read the first few pages of M's testimony of what he encountered when he encountered Sri Ramakrishna, Sri Ramakrishna just dismantled his sense of self-importance. So that later on, when in M's presence, Sri Ramakrishna was asked, who is this Mahendranath Gupta? Sri Ramakrishna said, oh, he is merely my instrument. And instead of being in any way offended or off-put by that, M was overjoyed to be the instrument of what he recognized as the divine, Om. What more could he could ask? The same thing happened to Swami Vivekananda. To put it in today's terms, when Swami Vivekananda encountered Sri Ramakrishna, he was a smart-alecky, self-important teenager. He just thought, well, for a good reason. He was tremendously intelligent. He had a memory that was unparalleled. And he just felt like he could dominate any situation. Sri Ramakrishna touched him, just touched him on his chest. And the universe began to spin for Vivekananda, and he was losing outward consciousness. And he said, what have you done to me? I have my family at home. I have my parents at home. And Sri Ramakrishna said, oh, it doesn't have to happen all at once. And then he touched him again and restored him to normal consciousness. Vivekananda went home and thought, what? No one can do this to me. I said, he was a smart aleck, you know. Nobody can do this to me. I'll go back and I'll show him. He hypnotized me or something. That'll never happen again. Well, he went back and it did happen again. And slowly and slowly, not brutally, but slowly and slowly, Sri Ramakrishna dismantled Vivekananda's sense of self-importance until he too could say ruefully but lovingly, because he recognized that the divine presence in the form of Kali was in Sri Ramakrishna, he said, that old woman made a slave of me. So losing self-importance, we need to stop thinking of ourselves as the master. Yes, we have to live our lives intelligently and with great attention. But if we offer our life and its actions, its thoughts, its perceptions, this is why this is all about karma yoga. Karma yoga is about doing. If we offer our thoughts, our feelings, our perceptions, our actions to the divine presence and say, whatever comes from that is a gift from you, I accept it as that. You are released, we are told. You are released from the bondage of that action, that karma. Once again, you are freer. You are freer. Who is freer? That divine presence, that Om that exists within. Christ said it as the kingdom of heaven is within. If there's a kingdom within, there must be a king within. Or queen, if you prefer to see it as a queen. I mean, the Trinity is one being, but it has its feminine aspect, the Holy Ghost or Holy Spirit. If that is within, that is who you truly are. As Swami Prabhavananda said, the chosen ideal, that aspect of the divine presence that appeals to your heart, that you hold in your heart, the chosen ideal is you yourself. No different. Learn to feel that living presence. And so this is what the spiritual practices that are taught here are all about. Learning to feel that living presence and relate to that living presence. Have a relationship with it. The third chapter is a hard pill to swallow for most of us. It's the title of that chapter is Death is an Advisor. When Yudhishthira was asked what is the most amazing thing in the world, what did he answer, Uma?
Everyone experiences that. But despite knowing that it is real, nobody wants to accept that it is real.
Exactly. Everyone experiences death. Everyone knows death. And yet, this he was asked in a very critical situation where he was going to rescue his brothers from death. They had all fallen into a trap. And Dharma, in the form of a crane, asks Yudhishthira, what is the most amazing thing in the world? And Yudhishthira quite wisely says, everyone experiences death, but they go on living as if it isn't so. Everyone knows they will die. This is a temporary suit we wear. The being within will not die, does not die. But this, it's got a few years left, that's all. So Don Juan goes on at quite some length drilling into Castaneda the idea that you should be thinking of death sitting like a great bird on your left shoulder at all times. Never knowing, you do not know when that bird will plunge its great beak into the top of your head, and your time will have come. He said, think of that. Think of that. That bird is there. Most of the time, it's just riding along. But at some point, and then he goes on to say, and you can talk to it. Just as Nachiketa talks to Yama, the god of death, in the Katha Upanishad, and learns from death the secret of how to live in the full splendor of your omness, so Don Juan talks about that. And then something that we're very familiar with in this tradition, the next chapter is titled Assuming Responsibility. Whose karma is it? Who generated it? Not necessarily this being that you are this moment. You've generated some in this lifetime. But if you buy the premise, in comedy it said, buy the premise, buy the bit. If you buy the premise that there is such a thing as reincarnation, there is that which you brought with you into this world. That's what brought you into this world. It's called prarabdha karma, the arrow that is in the air. It has been shot from the bow of your being and is going to land you know not where. But you have to say, well, I was the one who did that. Now, the complexities of who this I is, we could go on for the rest of the day talking about just that. But Don Juan says, don't fret yourself too much about the details. Just stop blaming other people. Because Castaneda was a great specialist at blaming other people, particularly his father. He blamed his father for a lot. His father wasn't what he expected him to be. So he had let him down. And Don Juan pulls that argument apart and shows Castaneda that his father had been virtually a saint. As we are all virtually a saint. We are all doing the very best we can. And it is our ignorance that keeps us from doing better. So when we assume responsibility, we don't become imprisoned by that responsibility. We become more free by taking that responsibility and stop blaming others. And then, of course, now we're talking about Don Juan as a representative of this great tradition that came down from the Toltecs. We find as we read his teachings that he is a descendant, spiritual descendant of the Toltecs, which are very ancient in the Mexican. They weren't called Mexican, of course, in those days at all. The Mayan and Aztec and Toltec cultures. And at one point, they made a real fetish of warriorness, of being a warrior. And they went off. This is something that Castaneda writes very painstakingly about. Don Juan explains how the Toltecs went off the rails and became so involved in the psychic powers. This is where there's real comparisons with what it is in Chapter 3 of Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. The psychic powers can be so alluring that they went way off the rails. And we see this in the society that the Spanish encountered when they came and conquered the Aztecs and the Mayans. They were practicing human sacrifice and generating tremendous psychic powers, and but they weren't able to defeat the Spanish with their relative simplicity. Though they far outnumbered them, they didn't defeat them. That happened both in Mexico, and it also happened in the Inca Empire. Though the Spanish were so far outnumbered, I mean by the thousands to one, they were not defeated. Because psychic power is not the kind of power that gives you victories in things like those kind of conflicts. So out of this came something much purer. Out of all of this degenerated stuff, out of the Toltecs, came something much purer. And of those of you who research Indian spirituality, will see that there are parallels in India as well. That there are times when the sadhus went off the rails. This is why Patanjali is so careful to explain everything that he explains in Chapter 3. So the next chapter in Journey to Ixtlan is becoming a hunter. And by this, now we introduce the word impeccable. Impeccable. That means perfect. Not one iota out of place. A hunter finds and takes what he needs and not one iota more. It is just exactly like what you find in Patanjali's Yamas. You take what you need and nothing more, and you leave no trace of your being. It's really an inspiring chapter, becoming a hunter. Seeing the world as a hunt for just what you need and nothing more. And then the next chapter is very hard for us to understand as we live in this society that we've created. But if you ponder it, if you read this chapter, it's titled Becoming Inaccessible. That is to say that, and I'll read something right after this that will illuminate it. So I'm not going to go too much into it because there's something from Walt Whitman that I'm going to use to end this. But this becoming inaccessible, you don't react. You do not, you, when the world pushes at you, you don't push back. You simply slide out of the way. You're no longer, does this mean that you tolerate antisocial behavior? No, that's not that. This is about your personal inner being and what you're, what's accessible, what can reach you and what cannot. And the last is disrupting the routines of life. Our habits, this is very common to us, and most self-help books are about this, you know. Most self-help books are about this. Change your habits. Change your habits. But it's very important. It can come down to, you know, which leg do you put into your pants at a time? You know, disrupt it. If you brush your teeth one way, brush your teeth another way. If you get up at 6 o'clock, get up at 5:45. Just because it's so easy to coast along on our habits. So there was in the United States in the mid-19th century someone that Swami Vivekananda referred to as the American Sannyasin. His name was Walt Whitman. His teacher was also a Native American. He transformed from being a rather pedestrian journalist, nothing really exceptional about his work or writing, competent, to becoming a saint. His participation in the war between the states was to be a nurse and a comforter to the wounded and the dying. But he also wrote a great, great work called Leaves of Grass. And within it is something called Song of Myself. And this is from Walt Whitman's Song of Myself. And see if you don't hear echoes of these chapters that I just read the titles of and explained a little bit. Particularly, it starts out about being inaccessible. This is an excerpt from Song of Myself. Houses and rooms are full of perfumes. The shelves are crowded with perfumes. I breathe the fragrance myself and know it and like it. The distillation would intoxicate me also, but I shall not let it. The distillation would intoxicate me also, but I shall not let it. Have you reckoned 1,000 acres much? Have you reckoned the earth much? Have you practiced so long to learn to read? Have you felt so proud to get at the meaning of poems? Stop this day and night with me, and you shall possess the origin of all poems. You shall possess the good of the earth and sun. There are millions of suns left. You shall no longer take things at second or third hand, nor look through the eyes of the dead, nor feed on the specters in books. You shall not look through my eyes either, nor take things from me. You shall listen to all sides and filter them from yourself. Trippers and askers surround me. People I meet, the effect upon me of my early life, or the ward and city in which I live, or the nation, the latest dates, discoveries, inventions, societies, authors, old and new, my dinner, dress, associates, looks, compliments, dues, the real or fancied indifference of some man or woman I love, the sickness of one of my folks or of myself, or ill-doing or loss or lack of money or depressions or exaltations, battles, the horrors of fratricidal war, the fever of doubtful news, the fitful events. These come to me days and nights and go from me again, but they are not the me myself. These come to me days and nights and go from me again, but they are not the me myself. Apart from the pulling and hauling stands what I am, stands amused, complacent, compassionating, idle, unitary, looks down, is erect, or bends an arm on an impalpable certain rest, looks with side-curved head, curious what will come next, both in and out of the game, and watching and wondering at it. Backward I see in my own days where I sweated through fog with linguists and contenders. I have no mockings or arguments. I witness and wait. And at last is as if he had quoted it from Sri Krishna in chapter 3 of the Gita. I witness and wait. I am that divine presence within. I witness and wait. So, now comes the part that you know is so relished from here, the part where we do this together, as our opening chant says, where we study together the art of spirituality. What do you have to say based on what you heard this morning? What questions do you have? What comments do you have? And please be bold. Speak out. This is where we do this together. Yes, Uma.
Not the titles of the book that you read, particularly Inaccessibility. That is truly Vedantic in the sense that how I understand is that he's talking about detachment.
Yes.
Not to react, particularly when you see it coming, and to be able to not all take it in, not only that, but not to try to be defensive or aggressive. So inaccessibility to me is that particular quality of detachment of Bhagavad Gita.
Yes.
And second, the title Hunter. Often, if you think of it, Hunter jars you. I mean, it's not a very spiritual type of... You cannot first think of Hunter as a spiritual person. But when you think of it, I think... what it says is to be a seeker. When you are a spiritual seeker, you discriminate what is proper, what is worth in anything, what is worth taking in. So just take what you need as you described. So that amounts to being very sure about what you want.
Yes. And what was the final answer that was given when Arjun was asked, what do you aim at?
Do what you choose.
Yeah. No, he said, I aim only at the eye of the
eye
Buddha.
Of the Buddha.
The perfection of his capability. The impeccability, as I said. This is a word that was introduced that Castaneda introduced into the language. Of course, it was there, but it was a word taken directly from the Spanish that Don Juan Matu spoke. Impeccable.
So for that,
no little fiber sticking out that will keep the thread from going through the eye of the needle.
For that, you need to have perfect knowledge about what you want and how to get.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So becoming a hunter, I mean, Don Juan takes Castaneda out and shows him how to build traps for rabbits. Mm-hmm. And Castaneda learns how and traps three rabbits. And he's very pleased with himself. And Don Juan says, let two of them go.
And there again, Krishna says, yoga is skill in action.
Yes. Why? Because they didn't need three rabbits. Don Juan says, this rabbit's time has come. We will eat this rabbit, but let the other two go. You don't save anything for the future. Sri Ramakrishna was, this is a message that came through again and again from Sri Ramakrishna. You don't skin and dry those two rabbits, those other two rabbits. No, sir. Thank you, Uma. Anything else from anyone?
Question.
Yes, please.
So, to approach this practically, I think karma yoga is being very difficult. Should we think differently from the Shakti aspect of it? Meaning, the Divine Mother has three components, right? Icha Shakti, meaning power of aspiration. Kriya Shakti means the power of action.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jnana Shakti means the power of knowledge. How these three components from the Divine Mother helps to practice the karma yoga?
Are you asking a question or are you telling me something?
I'm asking how it integrates in karma yoga. Is that or not?
Well, we have to go back to what is acting. In the Chandi, which is about the Divine Mother, it is said the Divine Mother is the only thing that is acting. So when we're in any given moment and we're looking at what seems to be our opportunity to act, we have to think, this is the Divine Mother that created this, is sustaining this, it is empowering the ability to act. So all three that you just talked about are there. Say again those three components that you talked about of Shakti.
Icha Shakti, which is the power of aspiration.
Mm-hmm.
Kriya Shakti, which is power of action.
Mm-hmm.
And Jnana Shakti, power of knowledge. They all, when we do karma yoga, when we do practically the karma, I thought there must be an integration of these three. Without the Divine Mother's
the only way they're going to integrate is to surrender your own willfulness. Mm-hmm. Mother, according to the Chandi, is volition, is aspiration. That's the way that whole Sarvabhuteshu sequence starts. Mother is volition. And then it goes through this whole list of attributes of action and knowledge. Mother is memory. Is memory. Not causes memory. Mother is memory. Which that is the primary component of our knowledge, is it not? What we know is what we remember. So, this aspiration or volition gets its application through what we know And if we think about what we know, what we remember, and we think it is Mother, Mother is that, then this action part becomes, as Sri Ramakrishna said, if we're in that space, if we're in that mood, you become like an expert dancer. You cannot put a foot wrong. Simply because these things do then totally integrate, seamlessly integrate, not because you are integrating them, but because they are already integrated. The power behind, as Vivekananda said. So very good question. You know, and I'm sure great long treatises have been written about it. But we have to be, we have to think simply. We have to think, what are the primary principles, rather than the elaborate bhashas on these things. Who's acting here? If Om is everything and Om is Mother, then we either will surrender to that or we won't. The less we surrender to it, the more complexity we cause for ourselves and the more difficulty we cause for others. The more we surrender to it, really genuinely heartfelt surrender to it, things become simpler rather than more complex. It becomes evident what to do. And then it even becomes evident how to do it.
Surrender to what again?
Surrender to the fact that you are not the doer. I mean, as I said, you don't have to buy this premise. You don't have to believe any of this. This is all stuff that is presented on a Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon now, with the idea that it helps us unburden ourselves of the ignorance that imprisons us. The more we internalize the idea, I mean, when the Upanishad says, Om is everything and is doing everything. We don't have to believe that. There's nothing, and we won't be bad and wrong if we don't believe that. The assertion is that if we do believe it and we surrender to it in the sense of karma yoga, offering everything, things become easier, less complex, and we are freer, therefore, and thereby. Anybody else? Yes, Dr. Mudge.
There are several points that you made that are worth contemplating rather than just superficially and hurriedly going through it.
Mm-hmm.
But interestingly, some of the points are also covered as Aditya is doing his puja here.
Mm-hmm.
But what is happening that that puja has become a part of our tradition.
Mm-hmm.
So we do not give any attention to the components as we are going through that one. Like St. Patrick's Day. You say St. Patrick's Day, you think of dream, nothing else. Who was he? Was he Britisher? Was he really Irish? Nobody wants to know. Dream. So, if an Irishman is sitting here today, all he would say, oh, I'm so glad the leaves have been there. That goes to show how much conditioning our brain goes through. And to that extent, the first one that you said, delete the past.
Yes.
It's so difficult and so essential.
Mm-hmm.
And then in his puja, he says, dispel the Buddhas. And Buddha is something past.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why Shiva is known as Buddha Natha. He has a control over the past. And this is best exemplified by the oft-given example of the elephant. When the baby elephant is tied down with a chain, he cannot break it because he's too small and too young to bring it. But then as he grows, he's capable of breaking the chain, but he leaves it apart. I have tried that before. I cannot break the chain.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, he gives up the effort on that one. To that extent, the delete button that you are talking about is so essential. We become the prisoners of the past.
That's why the book starts with that chapter.
Yeah.
Stopping the world means erasing your personal history.
And about the doer that you were thinking, I was just thinking that when a patient is anesthetized,
mm-hmm.
many times, you know, he sleeps on the table and the anesthesiologist says, start counting 1 through 10.
Mm-hmm.
And he or she is so confident, oh boy, I can do it. What's that? And
sleeps.
The anesthesia keeps on pumping from the way. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Sleeps.
Who was counting? And I think we are, the body is important as long as it is connected to the higher source. The moment it is disconnected, your ability, what you think you have invested in the body, disappears like snow before the sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't last too long to get taller.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say, I was just thinking, giving a lecture. He gives a lecture and he talks about death and everything. But in that process, if he dies, they would say, remove the body.
Mm-hmm.
They would not give the name that remove Mr. Smith. No. Mr. Smith was Mr. Smith as long as he was speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And then he became a body. That's why the death is translated in Sanskrit as Dehanta. It is the end of the body. Nothing more. So this is why Shankaracharya says, Eta Chintaya Varam Varam. Think over this over and over and over
yes.
and over again.
Yes.
And hopefully one day a part of it might creep in.
Yeah. Part of it might creep in, yes.
Back to the surrendering. Okay, so we surrender our actions and we'll say Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa and give our actions to the Lord, but we still have our prarabdha karmas to work out. They'll still be coming to us. No, they will not.
Your prarabdha karma is intimately connected with your spiritual practice. As Mother says, if you are doing your spiritual practice, if you are genuinely devoting yourself to the divine presence, destiny herself will strike out from the book of record what she has written there about you.
That can be a good thing.
That is a direct quote from Sharada Devi. Destiny herself will strike off from the book of record what she has written there about you. And so one of her disciples asked, well, Mother, does that mean that nothing will happen? No, it doesn't mean nothing will happen, but if you were to lose a hand, you will get a scratch. Practicing, doing our spiritual practices can make us pure. This is why the Chaitanya's prayer, which is chanted here 6 mornings a week, says, chant the name of the Lord and his glory. You can substitute her glory just as easily. Chant the name of the Lord and her glory unceasingly, that the mirror of the heart may be wiped clean and quenched that mighty forest fire, worldly lust, raging furiously within. Your past karmas are wiped away and you will stop creating new ones.
And chanting the name of the Lord means chanting the mantra, right?
That is one way of chanting the name. Well, not any mantra, but an appropriate mantra, yes. Yes, dear. Yes, Swayam.
Because the Brahman or the Absolute, the one who wants to become many, who
Music
yes.
Company, has done, I mean, such an amazing job. He is a great designer.
Look around us.
And I don't even know if this is a question that's worth asking or fair, but why? Why does that one do this, become the many, so many?
I wasn't there at the time.
Yeah, I don't think that's a question.
It's beyond thought's compass, dear. It's beyond thought's compass. It seems to be in the nature of things. You know, some people speculate God is lonely. Oh, please. I mean, really? You know, that doesn't register with me. Some people have said that. There just isn't any way of it. It's kind of a non-question, because it's just. This is why Marcus Aurelius wrote it this way: "It loves to happen. It loves to happen." Notice the no gender. No. It loves to happen. And so it happens. And we are it, and we are happening right now. This is the wonder. This is the great adventure, that when we get the right attitude, we no longer see this life as a chore and a burden and stop blaming this and that. We see, I'm a participant in this great adventure. I don't know how I got here. I don't know where I'm going next. But right now, things are pretty good, pretty interesting, pretty neat. So then the next moment, they're not so good, they're not so neat. But if we're at all bright, we'll say, this is just a moment. And then it'll be another moment, and another moment, and another moment. Are we doing that? Are we making those? No, the Chandi says, oh no, mothers, you are the one who made minutes, moments, and other divisions of time in order to bring about change in things so that this could go on, so it could happen. So it loves to happen, so it happens. We can't say why. But Sri Ramakrishna said, come close to the neighborhood of God, come close to God, and all of these questions and paradoxes and issues resolve themselves in your knowledge of God. Why? Because that's who you are. There isn't any contradiction. The contradiction is only due to our ignorance. Our ignorance seems to produce these contradictions. Wonderful question. Anybody else? Yes?
I just wanted to lighten up something that you said last. Breaking the routine. Breaking the routine.
Yes.
That you talked about.
Yes.
And that reminds me of what I think Chesterton, the British essayist, wrote about breaking a habit, how difficult it is.
Mm-hmm.
For example, this spelling of habit, take out H, a bit remains.
Mm-hmm.
Take out A, bit remains.
Mm-hmm.
Take out B, it remains. So, always.
Right.
Habits are.
But the samskara. But,
you know, this is the thing we have to, if we want to energize ourselves, we can then think about what Emerson said. He said, consistency is the hobgoblin of small minds.
Yes.
Do I want a small mind? No, as Swami Sradhananda said, live in the Bhuma, live in the unlimited. Don't keep yourself in the limited. Become that hunter. Become that one who looks, as Don Juan said to Castaneda, it's much more fun when you don't know in which bush the rabbit is hiding. You don't know where it's going to pop out. See this as an adventure. We assemble the world, this small s self, assembles the world according to our memories, our mental impressions, and our habits. We learn these from well-intentioned people in this lifetime that are trying to help us be what they regard as a success. Most of the time, they end up drumming into us a bunch of stuff that keeps us limited.
Think out of the box.
Yes. And there's a wonderful word in German. Its connotation is excellent. The word in German is ausgezeichnet. Means out of the box. Aus, out. Gezeichnet, box. Out of the box. Excellent. So yes. As long as we stick to the consistent, the routine, the habitual, we're welcome to do it. But we're just then welcome to our imprisonment. Anything else?
The only time in life that we are tied down to something is when we are in the womb. We are tied down to the umbilical cord. Hmm. And then you are set free.
Yes.
And then you create your own ties.
Yes. Balakrishna, did you have something?
A couple of things. One is Ramana Maharshi used to encourage some of his devotees who, you know, wants to celebrate their birthdays.
Mm-hmm.
He used to say, no, celebrate the death day.
Mm-hmm.
This is, he used to encourage some of his devotees.
Yes.
And the second thing is, especially the Mandukya, even though it's only 12 shlokas,
mm-hmm.
the one of the Swami, it's a metaphor. He says, the frogs croak, they come out of the water and they croak, even though they know a snake can come and catch them.
Mm-hmm.
Even then, fearlessly they do it.
Mm-hmm.
So that fearlessness you need to get into this, how can you say this world is completely, not there. Just like the dream state, the awakened state is not there.
Yeah,
so this is what the...
Of course it's there. Who among us is going to sit here and tell us that this isn't happening? It's nonsense. Of course it's happening. We just need to see it correctly. We just need to see what's happening correctly. Then it's no longer a prison. As Sri Ramakrishna said, it becomes a mansion of mirth.
And the third thing is, especially the karma yoga, even though you have those three things, Ichha Shakti, Kriya Shakti, Jnana Shakti, but also, the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, first you have to help yourself. You have to grow.
So
this is where the Kriya Shakti and all, Ichha Shakti comes into the picture. But we have to surrender everything, whatever we do, to Bhagavan. This is one of the Swami, just easy to remember. He says, offer everything and accept whatever the results that come as a prasad.
Yes. As prasad means gift from God. So, yes, absolutely. If we wish to be free, this is the first, this is the second of the graces. The first is human birth. We've taken human birth. It's a remarkable achievement all by itself. An achievement of Om, not achievement of this. Second is the yearning to be free. That's the second grace. That yearning to be free, not everyone experiences it, but I suspect everyone sitting here this afternoon is experiencing it. Otherwise, why would you make the effort to come here? And the third grace, the third great grace, is the grace of a teacher. So we have, just choose. Whether it's Christ, whether it's Buddha, whether it's Sri Ramakrishna, whether it's Krishna, choose. Then when you've chosen, take it deep within yourself and do what they say. Those who drink from my mouth, the Christ said, shall not taste death. How much bigger a promise do we need? And what came from his mouth? Ask and ye shall receive. Knock and it shall be opened unto you. If you ask your father for bread, will he give you a stone? If you ask for a fish, will he give you a serpent? No. We, this volition toward freedom, which is mother herself within us. This is what the Chandi says. Mother herself, this volition toward freedom. Listen. And then, of course, comes the grace of your own mind, the fourth grace. When you've aligned yourself with whatever, whoever your teacher is, and whoever the representative of that teacher is, you've aligned them, yourself with them, and you're doing what they say, then in reasonably short time, you begin to experience the grace of your own mind. Life is less troubling. It doesn't mean it becomes untroubling, just less troubling. Yoga is the breaking of contact with pain. All right, we'll close it there. Let there be peace in outer space.
Let there be peace in
the sky, on the earth, and in the waters. Let there be peace in the herbs, the plants, and the trees. May the gods be peaceful. May the whole universe be pervaded by peace. Let this infinite universal peace prevail throughout my being. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shantihi. Peace, peace, peace be unto us and to all beings everywhere. And now, as we know, there will be some nice treats and some coffee, tea, and some treats in the monastery. Please come on in. Amy, that's directed especially at you since this is your first time here. Come and join us inside and meet some of these people. Okay, let's go inside.